Welcome.
Tēnā koutou katoa.
We thank you for coming in this morning. We've read your original submission, which is very detailed and full, so thank you for preparing that. You don't need to read that out to us because we already read it, but you're welcome to speak to it and highlight key points.
Before I start, I have intentionally and deliberately shortened my oral submission so that there's time to obviously answer questions you might have, but more importantly for me to actually listen to how you see in practice this all working out in our situation. Like I'm curious to learn from you guys as to the advice you'd give me going forward, because this is just such a hugely implicating plan on a particular business. So I've tried to shorten this as best I can.
Just on that, I'm afraid we're going to disappoint you. That's not what our role is. Our role is to listen to your issues of concern, put that in the mix with what everyone else is saying, and then consider how and if the provision should be amended.
I hope as my submission will illustrate, that there needs to be collaboration and there needs to be equal time for listening and questioning. And so I deliberately make myself available to listen to the advice that, because frankly, the publicity around this, in my view, has been appalling, and the ability to learn disgraceful. And even yesterday it was with farmers who knew nothing of the proposed Southland Water and Land Plan. And so the communications that have come have been next to non-existent as to how we are going to live with this plan.
Right. We'll just proceed with your verbal presentation. Okay. Take it from there.
My name is Murray Shallard, and together with my wife Jo and three children, we farm approximately 760 hectares at Wendon, not far from where Thomas is. Our river is the Waikai, our mountain is the Mid-Dome. It is our home. It is our place of standing. It is true that like the deer, the gorse and the trout, we also have adapted to this environment. And through good times and bad, we have both embraced and fought change in what we could and couldn't control. We are privileged and blessed to steward this land. We take our responsibility to look after not just our animals, rivers and soils, but also our people too. All living things are a gift from God, and despite the rhetoric, we are not at war against the earth. It is alive and needs to be cared for, because we simply owe it to future generations. By my estimates, we border approximately 3 kilometres on one side of the Waikai River, and 2 kilometres on both sides of the Wendon Creek, as well as many other seasonal and ephemeral streams and gullies. Having converted the family farm to dairy in 2000-2001, monitoring of bores and water bodies would indicate that we have had minimal effect on water quality. In fact, in preparing for this, came across this report on E. coli in Southland, in that our bridge tested in the middle of our dairy farm has the lowest E. coli levels in Southland. But there's still much to learn and much to trial going forward. And I would accept that in the recovery of farming after the 80s, that fertiliser use has dramatically increased, albeit with much needed gains in performance, efficiency and production. I think it's worth sharing that our farming enterprise employs a lower order sharemilker who subsequently employs 3 other full-time staff, all mostly married, and live on farm in homes we supply and maintain, and their children in our local school. There is also casual calf rearers, milkers, tractor drivers, other casuals, and contractors, not forgetting consultants, accountants, sales, and service people who make running this place possible. Partnering in these people's development and realizing the potential and all these people is one of the greatest joys that farming brings. Collectively, we spring calve 900 crossbred cows and target to have 850 in milk cows by Christmas. Almost all heifer and bull calves are reared and taken through. Additional cattle are winter grazed, bringing the total number of cattle to approximately 2,500 head, run on a mixture of kale and fodder beet, totaling approximately 100 hectares each year. It is important to realise, however, that 100 hectares is still only 13 to 15% of our total area. Now, there are four key points I'd like to focus on in reiterating my submission, which are: one, the physiographic classification of our property; two, the wintering rules; three, understanding the link or links between how land is used and the environment; and four, the need for a working group to successfully implement the plan. And I must say that the process of the plan and the submitting and that has helped clarify for myself enormously where I sit on this. So I thank you for the process, it's been very good. So firstly, the physiographic zones, and you can see there's a map there that was readily available. As stated in my submission, I oppose the physiographic classification of a large part of our property as Old Matera. And so it might be worth illustrating, if this will blow, that there is effectively the home farm, which is the dairy unit where we calve 900 cows. But this here, up the road and up that road, is approximately 1,200 acres of support land. And you see that this predominantly has been classified as Old Matera. Now, obviously, there's the Waikai River in here, in the riverine, and then you're up to what you would be Old Matera Wendon side. But I am trying to argue that this classification as Old Matera is completely different to this side of the valley. So, although not a trained expert, I would challenge this classification for what we've been deemed Old Matera based on topography, hydrology, and geology, as myself and consulting representatives have uncovered through this process, according to S-maps, and I wasn't technological enough to be able to get that up on the screen for you, but it has, I'm sure it's available, is that if you look at S-maps, there's actually been no soil profiling undertaken on this area that has now been classified as Old Matera. Working with Environment South and Land Sustainability staff in 2014, indicated that these soil, although not tested, were more likely, more likely to be glade than oxidising. Now, the advice at the time was that this land, and this is why the work was done in 2014, was to potentially convert that land. And the report back from Environment Southland, which I do have with me for anyone that's interested, is that this was tier one acceptable for dairy conversion at the time of 2014. Now, I also understand that the physiographic zones area has been modelled from the original. And so to know how some people have been able to escape and others left interests me. And so my request for point one is that Environment Southland and representatives on our behalf collaborate on testing or proving the correct physiographic zoning of our farmland that's believed to be Old Matera. So that's my point one. Okay. Secondly, wintering rules or the intensive winter grazing. Although accepting the need for regulation and monitoring, I feel this aspect of the planned Southland Water and Land Plan is simply compliance for the sake of compliance. Essentially, I am hoping to be proven wrong that this approach is or will reverse or positively impact water quality. I say this because I believe 75% of farmers, and many who sit in here this morning would be the people I'm talking about, already attempt best practice in regard to what they do and how they manage their farms. And so the creation of farm and environmental management plans and resource consents, they in themselves won't achieve the desired environmental goals. So the challenge appears to be finding the link between the plan and the science. And I would suggest the localised or uniqueness of every property will make it very hard to consistently implement regulations without accepting that there are individualised consents need to be issued on a case-by-case basis. So again, is that the Waipunamu Bridge that is there had the lowest, that's right in the midst of our 900 cow dairy operation since 2000, has had the lowest E. coli levels in water tested in Southland. Now our monitoring bore that runs there has combined nitrite levels of 4. Now well under the acceptable range of 10, and only a mile away from Old Matara zone on the other side of the gully where they're running at 14. It's crazy. So already, as I have indicated, our farm footprint is a lot different to other areas with the same physiographic zones. And my hope is that with 100% transparency surrounding the science and ultimately the limit setting, that it all must work together to avoid the contradictions. I think it's also important to note that using Overseer as a farm model is that both the dairy farm platform and the support land individually came out with, and I know Overseer is not an exact model, but it's the model that probably helps us understand things, is that both operations, if you want to separate them, came out with the same end loss of 25, which I would suggest is very acceptable in regards to how our water quality is going. You know, we're not in the high bracket at all. And so we're still in the dark as to with limit setting as to how this is all going to work. As I've said in my submission, the cost of regulation must be based on scale. And everyone, that is all ratepayers, including those farming under 50 hectares total land holding and urban dwellers, must contribute to and share in the cost of compliance in achieving the outcomes of this plan. Because without 100% buy-in, the goal of conserving and maintaining water quality will be compromised from the outset. And to clarify what I'm saying there, is it's a question of accountability. Because where there is a cost to all, it will demand accountability for the service provider. I also think it is important to distinguish between farming systems that need to support and or maintain their own livestock and farmers who use their land in an ad hoc way, taking whatever opportunities that fall their way. In respect to dairy farming, the milking platform is only one aspect of a larger picture, and when support land is added to the milking platform, I would suggest averaged across the total land area, dairy isn't the dirty culprit it's been made out to be. Surely it would benefit everyone if dairy farmers were encouraged to purchase and run support land and wintering blocks. The priority of area used in intensive winter grazing must fall on those with capital stock who farm herds or groups of animal breeding animals year on year. I don't understand the need for getting consent if farm environmental management plans are going to be required. I request that intensive winter grazing for those with their own capital stock be a permitted activity up to 20% of total land holding, except for alpine and peat physiographic zones, provided that farmers supply farm environmental management plans on request and all FEMPs are made available for random auditing. That there is a transition period of 3 years out to 2020 before compliance of new regulations are enforced. That except for alpine and peat wetlands, all other physiographic zones share the same upper limit for area with respect to intensive winter grazing. 4, that except for alpine and peat wetlands, upper limit of land use recommended for intensive winter grazing be 20% of land owned. And except for alpine and peat wetlands, for the transition period, the first 3 years, resource consent will not be required for intensive winter grazing. And the reason for that is I'd like to see in the plan a greater collusion with the limit setting so that the regulations came all out together, not drip fed. And lastly, all data will be shared and publicly available. Now, thirdly, the linkage between the way we use the land and the environment. For sustained and meaningful change to occur, it requires that all parties work together, respecting the views of everyone, accepting that change is a process, and that outcomes of the plan are not a destination. There is still much to learn, and with a collaborative and transparent approach, monitoring, modelling, and trialling will help appease farmers' consciousness and create a culture for greater understanding and educating. I request that Environment Southland will increase the number of available staff who are available to resource, consult, and educate farmers through the first 3 to 5 years of this plan, including making available one-on-one consultation with farmers and preparing farm environmental management plans and or resource consents. Environment Southland will have and make available scientists and experts to interpret and make recommendations on the data and results of the monitoring, including going out to the regions to present and educate on trends and progress. Like a living example of that would be recently, where we had Ewan and Karen come to Balfour to explain some of the data, and I question why we haven't seen any of this before this plan. Where has the working with us been? It's just been hodgepodge. Sure, there might be the odd field day in that, but we're actually talking about serious outcomes here. I also request that Environment Southland will make all data and monitoring coherent and available, possibly online by catchment, making access and transparency a priority for the purpose of interpreting and following the trends and results and progress of Southland water quality. Also, that Environment Southland give all parties equal opportunity to understand and contribute in the science and the direction of associated limit setting proposals. And lastly, I strongly believe that the implementation of this plan needs to be guided by a group representing council and all interests in this process. The group needs to collaborate and communicate with transparency and integrity as a unified group, the expectations, regulations, and processes to all involved. I request then, finally, that the plan include a requirement for a directive for such a group. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. And I just note on pages 10 and 11 of your submission, you set out quite clearly your aspirations for Rule 23, which you stressed to us verbally as well. So that's clearly laid out before us. Just to remind you, you're probably aware of this, our job as a panel is to consider how the provisions of the plan should be amended, if at all. And a number of the issues you raise relate to the wider activities of the council. And I'm sure the three councillors who are also panel members made a note of that to address probably in another forum. But I'll just see if we have any questions or clarification for you, Lloyd.
No, I think I'm happy.
Do you have anything we should clarify?
No, very thorough submission, thanks.
Well, it was very thorough, actually, and it was your original submission was very well set out, and as the chairman says, very clear to us what you want, and a lot of that's very reasonable. So I think that was a very good submission. I did have one question though; it wasn't clear to me just where these water samples that were taken, which had low fecal coliforms in it. Was it the Waikai River, or was it
yes, the Waikai River on the Waipunamu Bridge?
Okay, so that's the main river.
That's the report there.
Yeah. Pyramid Bridge,
the Waipunamu Bridge on the Waikai, which interestingly at 100 is 3 times lower than the Piano Flat.
Is that a mean over a number of samples or just one sample?
To be fair, I didn't do the digging. I just looked at the glossies.
Found one that suited.
I found the one that suited. Exactly. Like a drug test at work job site.
And no, there's nothing that I need to clarify with your submission pretty clear, so thank you very much for that.
Just thank you for the opportunity, and obviously you have a lot of concerns going forward, and trust that the process will work.
Oh yeah, and we're hearing from over 300 individual submitters, so you can be pretty sure that the common themes and messages are being well heard.
Thank you.
Thank you.